Welcome to Health Hats, empowering people as they travel together toward best health. I'm Danny Van Leeuwen, a two-legged, cisgender, old white man of privilege, living in a food oasis who can afford many hats and knows a little bit about a lot of healthcare and a lot about very little. Most people wear hats one at a time, but I wear them all at once. We will listen and learn about what it takes to adjust to life's realities in healthcare's Tower of Babel. Let's make some sense of all of this. As CEO of our health, we manage, we lead, we decide, we learn. In the role of CEO, or as team members for others, we engage in many difficult conversations. These conversations often include sharing information, tracking plans, activities, and symptoms, making decisions, managing circumstances, and adjusting to personalities. We don't understand. We're overwhelmed. We can't decide. Emotions get the best of us. We have trouble listening or caring. So the opportunity for conflict between any of our health team seems endless. Almost a year ago, I met a fellow podcaster, Jane Bidall. Jane is a veteran attorney, certified conflict coach, mediator, and facilitator. She established Dovetail Resolutions in New Haven, Connecticut in 2006. Her focus is on nurturing relationships, not ending them. In her podcast, Crafting Solutions to Conflict, she explores day-to-day conflict resolution. In the audio, you're going to hear me misnaming the podcast at first. And Jane gently and seamlessly corrects me. It's Crafting Solutions to Conflict. Jane is so positive about conflict. It's my kind of approach. So here's my conversation with Jane Bidall. Jane, thank you so much for joining me. I've been following you since we took the podcasting course together, and you have the Creating Solutions to Conflict. But you know, Jane, I don't actually think very much about conflict when I'm listening to your podcast. I'll tell you what I'm hearing.
Okay.
I'm hearing you talking about preventing conflict. I hear you talking about learning decision-making skills. I hear you considering scenarios when there's an imbalance in power dynamics, when there's age differences, when there's readiness to work together differences. And it seems like it's only tangentially about a conflict. I know you're an attorney and you're a mediator and this is your point of view, but maybe it's because I'm in healthcare. And I think this just so sounds like healthcare decision making.
Fair enough.
I think more about the relationship and the decision making part than the conflict. The reason I wanted to talk to you about that, talk to you specifically, is because I feel like there's something that we who are living in the world of how people make medical choices can learn from your work in conflict management and mediation. Am I making sense?
You are. So first, I'm so glad that you're listening to Crafting Solutions to Conflict. And I have to say, as we were going through the podcasting fellowship, it was so helpful to me to interact with people who could say, close, but not quite, and help me think about what I wanted to do. And so the idea to me of crafting solutions is different from let's resolve conflicts. That's okay. A piece of it, but it's not all of it. And I think I agree with you completely. I am actually less interested in, okay, everything's really a mess, and now we have to figure out how to fix it. In fact, when I think about and talk about conflict in its biggest sense, there are different types. There's good conflict.
Right.
There's bad conflict, and then there's ugly.
So give me an example.
Good.
Yeah.
To my way of thinking is the creative and collaborative type.
Okay.
For example, in a healthcare situation, Let's say someone is facing a situation where I need to make some choices about my treatment options. Mm-hmm. And I'm being told, well, there's this, and then there's this other thing. And maybe the creative and collaborative way to look at this is it's not either or. Maybe I need to be looking at both of these options together. Maybe I need to be having a conversation with these potential medical providers. And I say potential because I'm still going to decide what works for me.
Okay.
Talking with them about, well, this aspect of it doesn't really sing to me. Is there some way we can address that? Mm-hmm. That to me is creative,
okay.
Good conflict.
Okay. Well, I can definitely think of toxic conflict. I don't know why. I'm just sort of allergic to calling it conflict.
You're in very good company, Danny. Okay. People hate the word. They won't use the word.
Okay.
They say they want to deal with it, and then if you use the word, they run away. No, that's normal. That's okay. Or typical.
Let's go back to there are choices in front of me, and I'm trying to make those choices. And I need to make the choices with somebody else. So in this case, it's clinicians, but it could be my partner. It could be my boss. It could be an employee. It could be so many, a vendor, a merchant, who knows? It could be all sorts of things. But the choices are about me.
Yes.
And there are times when I am so clear about what I want. For example, and I say this a lot, I don't want to do anything that's going to mess with my pathological optimism. Okay. That's really important to me. And I don't want to be depressed.
Right.
I enjoy life and I want to keep enjoying life. I'm pretty clear on that. And so decisions might be, how is this going to affect my mood? Mm-hmm. As opposed to do this.
Right.
It's the right thing to do. And then I don't know if I can afford it, if it's going to affect my mood, if it's going to interfere with my playing my saxophone, hanging out with my grandkids, the things that are important to me. But then there's times where I'm exhausted or I just feel like crap. And so making choices is that much more difficult, especially if I don't already trust the person. That seems to be the elephant in the room in terms of making decisions is trust.
One of them, I'd say.
And so what's another one?
Well, I think, or maybe I'm not thinking elephants as much as you hit on a couple of different really important things. One is setting ourselves up as much as we can. And of course, it's not always possible to be at our best when we have to make a decision. Okay. And that may be I'm being pressured to make a decision on Thursday about a treatment option, about what we're doing next. I am really not in a good place to be making decisions on Thursday. And maybe it's better for me to have a conversation with the person who's pushing me to say, this is important to me. I want to do my best. Perfect beyond us all. I really want to make this decision on Friday. And if the
that's interesting.
You,
yeah.
Like today's just not a good day for this.
How many decisions are really emergencies? So that's a really good point that thinking first, if you're not ready to make a decision, admit that you're not ready. For me, sometimes I think, oh, I got to have my wife here.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Because
exactly.
I'm never going to be ready. I'm not going to be ready until we make a decision and do something. But, you know, so it's sort of a chicken and egg thing. My way out of that is I need Anne to be here.
Exactly.
I trust her.
Well, sometimes you know, the very presence of that person. And in the world of sort of once things are in conflict outside of in the more typical legal affairs, that kind of thing, there will sometimes be a conversation about, well, who's in the room who seems to be a decision maker? Well, actually, maybe not everyone who matters is at the table in the room.
Right.
And we need, there are people there who can't make a decision or are going to make a lousy one. Unless they go speak to someone else. And sometimes it's quite literally shareholders, they have an ownership interest, versus stakeholders. The person who is going to have an important role in the life of the person who's going to make that decision.
Okay.
So it's totally sensible to say, and now the other thing, and I think you hit on this, is it my emergency or is it someone else's emergency? Is it someone else says, oh, I really want to get this decided today. Why are you dragging your feet? Well, because it's my healthcare. It's my life we're talking about here. So that's one of the things that you hit upon. I think you hit on another one, which is things evolve. That's life. Things change. And making decisions that come across as, well, this is it forever. We're done. That decision is made one way or the other. We can never revisit. That's really tough.
Those are actually quite rare.
Yes. And so we should remember that. And sometimes we avoid making the decision if we overemphasize how permanent it is. It may
say,
not be.
Say that again.
We can overemphasize how important the decision seems to be because we overemphasize its permanency. Maybe it's not. Maybe we're going to try this approach for a while.
Yeah.
And certainly in the healthcare world, the fact that this is the response that many, many people have to this treatment. Doesn't guarantee that's me.
Totally. I preach that all the time. Yes, it's an experiment and it's likely to work for me, but it doesn't mean it will.
And so then it's an opportunity to say, well, let's see how this works on this actual body and human that we're talking about, me. I think it's also very useful to stay away generally in thinking about decision making from the black and white decisions. There's a lot of room in the middle so often of, well, let's try most of it. Let's try it for now. Let's see if we can modify it a little bit to work better for me. And staying away from the absolutes, the ultimatums, the take it or leave it's.
Yeah.
Those invite trouble.
So I think what goes along with what you said is, what is it going to take to carry out the decision once it's made? Is it a habit change? Is it a one-time thing? Is it going to cost money? Will I need transportation? Who's going to take care of the kids? Who's going to take care of my mom? In a way, it isn't just the decision. It's the whole process.
It's the implementing, and I think you hit on one important thing, which is so often we think in terms of the financial cost of something. And that's a piece.
Yes.
But it's not the whole.
Right.
It can be thoroughly affordable, and someone can say, oh, no problem. Your insurance will cover it.
Yeah.
Well, okay, that's all right. But if it means that every other aspect of my life goes backward,
right.
It's not such a great thing.
Yeah.
And now a quick break to hear about our sponsor, Abridge. I see many clinicians on a regular basis, way too many. I'm appalled at how little I can remember when I get home. My wife asks me, what did she say? What about this medication or that test? I'm happy to remember half of it. To help me remember everything, I downloaded a new smartphone app called Abridge. Now, when I talk to the doctor, I ask if it's okay to record our conversation. Nobody has said no yet. I push a big pink button to record, and after I'm done, the transcript from our audio appears. Not the whole thing, that's too much, but sections around medical keywords like fatigue, pain, tests, exercise, meds. Now when I'm done, I can share my visit with my wife, and she can listen to exactly what the doctor said. A bridge was created by patients, doctors, and caregivers. Check out the app at abridge.com. ABRIDGE.com. Or download it on the Apple App Store or Google Play Store. Record your health conversations. Let me know how it went.
So many things go through my mind as we're talking. There are people like me who I'm the decider. I'm clear that I'm the decider. That dictates how the crafting solutions goes, because I know it's up to me.
Yes.
But I think when it comes to healthcare, that's rare.
And not only that, but you're someone who is well equipped to make those decisions. This is the easiest scenario. I think every other one is harder.
Okay. Meaning either I don't have confidence to do it. I don't know that I can do it, that like it's allowed. I've never thought about it before. So those are even harder, because in a way, then you're not trying to craft a solution. And so you're like, it's sort of a setup for a conflict to occur.
Or you need an advocate, or more than one advocate. We're all different. And there are some of us who really struggle to even think about our own medical decisions. Mm-hmm. And those folks need a lot of support. Of course, there are younger people who are moving along that continuum of, I'm an infant, and of course my parents are making decisions for me, to, wait a minute, I'm getting a little older, mm-hmm. to the point of, why can't I make the decision all on my own? I might
right.
say that to my parents. And then at the other end of the age spectrum, maybe my judgment is not as good as it once was. Maybe my eyesight is not as good as it once was. And when uh-huh. someone hands me something to look at to understand this option, uh-huh. I can't see it very well. Or they want to explain it to me in spoken words. Uh-huh. My hearing is not that good. Maybe it's never been that good. And that's a really tough way for me to learn.
Or I don't learn through my ears. I learn through my eyes.
Absolutely.
Or I learn through taste or whatever. I'm better with other senses. I need to touch it.
And I think your mention before of trust is very important, that if I am struggling to process the data, I'll call it, to mm-hmm. make my best decision, mm-hmm. I want to be able to say that and not feel ridiculed mm-hmm. and not feel that this will compromise the power of my decision making. Mm-hmm. If I say, I don't understand what you just said, mm-hmm. and I have experienced that in the past when I was actually the advocate, not the person who was needing the care, mm-hmm. and when I said to this physician who had spoken to me in the worst jargon, I don't understand what you said, this person said exactly the same words louder.
I love it.
And I yeah. was not happy.
Right.
And
you want to throttle that person.
I was angry, and I was also frustrated at the idea that this person, now, sadly, there had been ongoing consultations with this person and the patient, and I was there as the advocate, knew that I spoke English as a first language, mm-hmm. knew that my hearing was fine, knew that my mm-hmm. eyesight was fine, my physical mm-hmm. strength was fine, mm-hmm. my judgment was fine. What about someone who doesn't have the benefit
right.
of all of that? What does yeah. this physician say to those folks?
Right.
Infuriating. Anyway, so that's my aside on that.
Well, so the thing that goes along with trust and being the CEO is that actually I don't make that many decisions. Like, I trust my team. And that was true when I was a boss and as a patient. I realize that I may ask questions, but I trust my medical team, and I'm just as happy for them to make the decisions and tell me what to do, because I can't handle them all. And it's such a relief not to have to worry about it. It's not like I'm putting in a new kitchen and I've got to make a decision about the knobs and the hinges and everything. I can just like let them say, this is what I recommend, this is what I recommend. Okay, okay, okay. It's just so much easier for me. But I couldn't do that if I didn't trust them.
Right.
I just couldn't. Ugh. It's so complicated. The when you think about people learning to craft solutions before they're in the middle, they have an emergency, right? So you're an attorney and a mediator. People came to you when they were past a point. And I don't know, I'm putting thoughts in your brain, but you can tell me if I'm wrong. I would be thinking, oh man, I wish they were more prepared for this. I wish they had this skill. I wish they had that skill. And I'm thinking, so what would they learn when they were children? What could they have learned earlier? How do people become ready to want to learn these things? And does it take a disaster? Does it take a devastating conflict to think, okay, for the next time, I'm going to need to learn blah, blah, blah? Your work, do you think about the skills that might be good for people to learn before they get to you?
Sure. Great question, Danny. And certainly the evolution of my professional work has been significant. And also the recognition that I wanted the podcast to be broader than my professional work, that okay, I really wanted to talk about some very specific tips of, just think about this. 4 minutes of me talking about a certain topic and people are like, huh, I can think about that. I can do that. Mm-hmm. Sadly, in my professional life, usually people don't contact me until things are not good.
Right.
Maybe not devastating, but they're not good. And they know enough, or they find out enough from the company website, LinkedIn profile, et cetera, that I'm not there to help them end the relationship. I don't do divorcing couples. I've never done that. Not interested. Yeah. Don't practice law anymore either. Still admit it. Just don't do it. And the continuing evolution for me is around the same time we were learning how to host and produce podcasts, I started to learn how to be a conflict management coach.
Coach.
Really interesting.
Say yeah, more about that.
Just to your point of how do I get better at this? And it is people who are in some sort of a challenge, and some are sent by bosses and others, it's a family issue. And sometimes it's a little of both. It's a family business, but it tends to be situations where someone recognizes this is not working. My approach, and typically in this particular model, it's called the Synergy Model, C-I-N-E-R-G-Y. Okay. Oh. And each stage, it's a very specific model. It's not a little wander around the neighborhood. It's really, let's do this, 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 and this. And it's trust the process. It is very powerful. The idea is understanding ourselves a little better and understanding the person that we're in this conflict with. It's usually somebody we know. What I love about this model is the client working with the coach gets to play all the roles. The two people who are in the conflict. Fascinating. So
that is interesting.
It's me recognizing, okay, Jane, you know what will happen if you use these words when you talk to Danny. He's going to get his back up for sure. Huh, maybe I need to practice getting my point across without saying the things that drive someone else nuts every single time. Similarly, I know what my own hot buttons are. And if someone says that to me, my immediate reaction, not a measured response, but my right off the hip, oh, how dare you, will start. And then actually practicing, how can I get my point across in a more productive way? And how can I listen to what someone is saying to me without overreacting to certain things that people say?
Is this something that could be extrapolated to virtual doctor office visits with scenarios and you take different roles? This is a great,
really interesting idea. Really interesting idea.
But I used to work with some people who were into virtual education.
Yes.
And they did work around making end of life decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And they were focused more on the clinician. But while I was working with them, I thought a lot about this is for everybody because
absolutely.
It's their clinicians are not making these decisions for themselves.
No.
They're working with somebody else. And so that somebody else could benefit from practicing.
Absolutely. And I think the practice is a big piece. Let me ask you if you've run into or come across a woman named Dawn Gross. She's based in California.
No.
And I met her 2 weeks ago at a conference. She is a physician.
Mm-hmm.
She used to do transplant work. And so certainly was around many people dying.
Mm-hmm.
She has a real interest and I think maybe no longer has, but had a radio show about death and dying.
Mm-hmm.
And now is involved in a company where they are working on helping people and training physicians to be better about having conversations about the end of life, what people choose to experience there. But to your point of practicing and anticipating, even without a fancy, almost anything, and I have suggested to people on an informal level, those of us who drive now have the good fortune of everyone else on the road thinks that we have our phone turned on. So if we're talking to ourselves in the car, they don't think we're crazy. And people, and I have recommended this, if you see a difficult conversation coming, you can actually practice saying the things you want to say. So the difficult words roll off your tongue. Or you can try them and say, I can't say that. That's not me. That's not the way I talk.
That's a solution for people who are wanting to be better at something.
True.
Rather than people who don't know that they don't know.
True. That's the hard one.
That is really the hard one. It's really a hard one. All I've been able to come up with in relation to people who don't know what they don't know is to planting seeds. I did this interview with an advocate who's a heart surgery, multiple sclerosis advocate, Teresa Wright Johnson. We were talking about planting seeds. In her advocacy work, she sees that somebody's not ready.
True.
She feels what she can do is plant a seed and be available when it sprouts.
That makes sense.
I don't know that there's anything else.
I think the other thing is a mindset. If we can encourage people, and sometimes it's even modeling, it is possible to have conversations and discussions without shooting the other person down, without rejecting what they have to say, without being defensive. And I think in the medical layperson world, having a recognition, and I'm going to think more from the layperson's perspective, I have no medical training at all, that I can respect what that person is saying to me and value the expertise. And I should also be able to have a conversation about that. And I will share with you that one of my husband's surgeons, he's had a number of orthopedic issues. One in particular, who he's just terrific in so many different ways, it's hard to keep track. One of the things that he does is when he's speaking to me after a surgery and explains what's happened, what to expect, what he saw once he got in there, he pauses.
Mm-hmm.
And he waits. And he's not afraid of the silence while the hamster is running on its wheel inside my head while I'm trying to think.
Yeah, that's a gift, isn't it?
If we could all do that.
Yeah.
And I think even just to appreciate those who do and thank them for it. And sometimes it's asking for it.
Yeah.
It's, I need a moment to digest that.
Yeah.
Can I just have a moment before you walk away? Let me think for a moment to see if I have another question for you. Which can feel a little assertive sometimes, but it could be said politely.
Yeah.
And it's not that much to ask. And I just have a few seconds to think through what you just said to me.
Right. Right.
So that I understand what you have told me.
Yeah.
For either a decision right now or a decision coming or just the context of what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
A quick break to plug myself. See the show notes or my website, www.health-hats.com, and click on Blog Podcast for more information, to subscribe, or contribute. If you like it, share it. Thanks.
Jane, where were you when you first realized that health was fragile?
Oh, boy. Probably as my grandparents aged. Mm. That would probably be the first thing that I noticed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one died when I was probably 9.
Mm-hmm.
Remember visiting him, and he was frail.
Mm-hmm.
I think that'd be the first thing that came to me.
Mm-hmm.
Probably.
What does healthy look like to you today?
Oh, boy. How long do you have, Danny?
5 minutes.
We can't go for an hour and a half and have a... What a wonderful question. And it's so many different things. I think it's physical health in a very traditional sense. It's emotional health. It's spiritual health. It's intellectual health. It's curiosity. It's the ability to adapt. And how important that is for all of us, because everything changes all the time. Just a wonderful question. So many avenues. And I think for all of us, it's not static. I'm better emotionally one day than the next, maybe 1 month than the next. Physically, well, I personally, I'm very fortunate, but I do manage to do goofy things and then hurt an ankle for a while or something else, and I can't do what I used to be able to do. But.
So being healthy isn't being at the top of your game all the time.
Oh, heavens. I think that perfection is a tough standard to meet.
Yeah, no kidding. All right. I appreciate you taking this time. You've given me some things to think about. The biggest thing, I think, is that is this really an emergency? And can I get I need some time. I think that's, I forget that.
I think we all do.
And
and the other person would like us to make the decision so they can move on.
Yeah.
And
right.
I can think of almost nothing where I would have a worse decision the next day. Almost always I'll have a better or at least as good decision.
Mm-hmm.
Not the same one, but
right.
just to let it mull.
Right.
And
I mean,
and
most things are not like you're bleeding out. You
right.
know, then there's like really no decision.
Right.
You know, you got to put pressure on it or you can't breathe. Well, you need air. You know, so we're really not talking about that. And there's really, you just got to let the person.
Please.
do it.
What needs to be done.
Right. Do it. Well, I will see you again soon.
Good. Good.
Yes.
And
thank you for
it.
Taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Talk My pleasure, soon. Danny. Lots of fun.
Okay. Bye.
Take care.
20 years ago, my boss, Bob Daugherty, now a dear friend, said, Danny, you're in a pickle. You're the consciousness of the organization, and you want everyone to like you. I was the director of quality management for an addiction treatment system. And I'm both conflict averse and have lost several jobs due to unresolved conflict, mostly around cultural inconsistencies. So I started this conversation with Jane defensively and eager to learn. I learned that there is good, collaborative, constructive conflict. Most decisions about me don't need to be made right now on someone else's schedule. It might not be convenient to them, but it can wait until I consult with whoever I consult with and I can sleep on it. I learned that most decisions are not permanent. You can try it and change. The decision to have surgery, however, is permanent. I learned that words matter. We have hot-button words. Best to know them, yours and theirs. I learned that I can practice difficult conversations in advance to feel more comfortable and in control in the moment. Where have you had conflict as CEO of your health? How'd it go? What did you learn? Please comment on my website or the show notes. May all your conflicts this week be constructive ones. Take care. Follow my blog, podcasts, and resources through my website. See you around the block.